Blog Talk Radio. PhD doesn't necessarily make you right, but in my case, I had a good education, and it helps me see the world, I think, a little more clearly than I might otherwise.
Now, this is being taped on telephone. That's their FCC requirements. You're not being tapped by NSA, I don't think.
No, I don't.
Okay. It's interesting you mentioned Purdue. We brought up the recent controversy of the Southern Poverty Law Center, Morris Dees, and the woman who's been running around doing a hit piece, she's got a PhD from Purdue.
Is that right?
Yeah, I'll send you her name. Her name is Heidi Beinrich, and she doesn't correct her errors, and, you know, it's typical left-wing arrogance. Jack, how do you choose the topics for the books that you write, and how many books have you written to date?
Well, I am right now, I'm finishing up what would be my 10th book with a, you know, major publisher under my own name, and I've also done...
Your own imprint?
No, not my own imprint. This book is of HarperCollins. Under my, that I've written. Jack Cashel wrote these books. This is about a half dozen other books or so that I've collaborated with other people on, and usually kept my name off the cover.
Usually. Well, there are other people with ghostwriters, and we know who they are.
Yeah, right.
What was the hardest book, the topic you chose for a book, what was the hardest one to produce?
I would say the hardest one was probably, in terms of actual research, was my book on TWA Flight 800, because it's such a highly technical subject, and it's something you really have to do your homework for to jump into. You know, I mean, you can't afford to make mistakes when you have, you know, thousands of aviators reading your book, and you know much more about that.
And other people, too,
right.
who may have been responsible.
That's right. People who speak that language as their first language. You know, for me, it's not my first language. So
right.
That took a lot of work. I'd also say Popes and Bankers, that same
Oh, my fun book.
And here, the hard part wasn't the historical part. The hard part was the Wall Street collapse, because that's, again, you're dealing with in a world where people speak a language, and there's... you know, hundreds of thousands of people who know that language well, and if you're going to wade into that discussion, you have to be able to master the vocabulary.
Well, I must say, the books I've read of yours, and of course I'm a speed reader, you have a beautiful fluidity and your choice of phraseology. So, and what I don't understand, even if they, and I know they don't like your topics, like the San Francisco Chronicle, why it is that the book critics at the Chronicle, the Los Angeles Times, the Chicago Tribune, Boston Globe, Philadelphia, you know, the major papers around the country, why don't their book critics look at your books, and even if they don't like it, which, they would give you a, mention that this book's been published and this is what we disagree with or don't like.
Well, you know, I don't take that personally, because the major media have simply stopped reviewing conservative books by conservative authors.
Mm-hmm.
And this happened to David Horowitz, this happened to Martin Le Pen, this happened to people who sell a whole lot more books than I do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, although what is curious is that, and this has been a recent development, because my first books were reviewed by the Kansas City Star.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, that's Thomas
and
White.
Right, and then they stopped reviewing.
Oh, William Allen White, I'm sorry.
Yeah, right.
Got the wrong White.
all white guys look alike.
And they age badly. Jack, you've been called by some critics who looked at your topics as the Stephen King of political writing. What do you say to that?
Well, you know, the scarier the topic, the faster people close to the sources of power run from it, because they may have too much to risk. So, for instance, if you are the editor of, say, the National Review, and you write a book on, let's say, the death of Ron Brown, and people presume that anyone who tackles this topic is some sort of nut job, you're not going to tackle the topic. So it goes uninvestigated. And here's how bad it was, Peter. Ron Brown, the Commerce Secretary, died in a plane crash in Croatia in 1996 under mysterious circumstances. There were 34 other people on board. It was an Air Force plane. One of the people on board was a guy named Nash, who wrote for the...
Eric Hoffman. The Passion Mind. Hoffer lives in one room in the Chinese section of San Francisco. No telephone, no radio or TV, no easy chair. His own files and a few books, a folding desk. Retired now as a longshoreman, he walks almost every day through Golden Gate Park, about 2.5 miles. He sees or hears some little thing. An idea begins to be born. He may jot down a short note about it. A special set of muscles in his brain holds the idea, refines it, maybe for a week, a month, a year, before he writes it out in a paragraph. Then one day, people here and abroad read it with a startled sense of recognition that this is original, profound, and simple. Some people call it genius. One day this summer, we had a talk.
You know, Mr. Hoffer, I've always wondered why you kept on as a laborer after you became a very successful and established writer in this country.
Well, I never became a successful writer. I could never earn my living writing. And I'm not a writer, Mr. Severide. I'm never sure I could write anything. Look, if you would think a thing through to the bitter end, there isn't much to say as far as human affairs are concerned. There isn't a thought that I couldn't express in 200 words. And you can't earn a living writing 200 words.
Mr. Hoffer, everybody has a kind of there's a sort of mechanical process in which one arrives at his ideas. Does manual labor start something going in your mind, leave your mind free to think abstractly? How does it work?
I think some of the most original ideas I had, Mr. Severide, came to me while I was working. And you know what a glorious feeling it is. Here you work, you talk with your partner. And in the back of your head, you compose sentences. That's when life is glorious. You have two sides of your head, you know. Oh, it's a feeling that nothing you could surpass this glory, you know, of being able all day long to compose sentence by sentence, and then you come home in the evening, and before you even wash your hands, you sit down, and it's all there. See? It's a glorious feeling. I get the longshoreman mad when I said, I just tell him, you know, I can't think of anything more exciting than going to bed with a half-finished paragraph.
A half-finished paragraph.
And that's it. It's true. Imagine, you take a half-finished paragraph, you go to bed with it, and in the morning, can you think of anything more salubrious, more helpful, more glorious, to sit up in your bed and the first thing to think about is the other half of the paragraph? Your day is made!
Words are pretty powerful things, huh?
Oh, they have power, you know, they destroy, they revive. And, you know, in my case, again, being practically illiterate, you know, the only way I learned to write is by seeing how other people write, you know. I still, whenever I read, this is my chief preoccupation. How did he do? I'm still learning. I'm never sure I know how to write. And, Alan, you know, when I finished this little book, The Temple of Our Time, I sent it to my new editor, a very fine person, a very bright person, but young, you know, and he mixed the quality with quantity, and he sent me a letter, Mr. Hoffer, couldn't we thicken it a little bit? I mean, add something, make it a little bigger? I didn't get mad. I wrote my letter, Dear Mr. McRae, I said, the book has 6 chapters, each chapter has at least one original idea. So you have 6 original ideas. Each chapter has at least 2 good sentences. Add it up. You have 6 original ideas, 12 good sentences. Now, when I find a book, even at 1,000 pages, 6 that has 6 original ideas, 12 good sentences, I celebrate for a month. And it's a fact.
Sure.
See, right now, as I'm getting older, how hard it is to find anything that will fetch you. If I get just one little sentence in my book, I'll remember the book to the end of my life.
Well, now, how do your friends on the waterfront really look at you, knowing you write books?
Oh, every longshoreman knows that if he tried hard enough, he could write like Shakespeare. Everybody will. How often have I been told by a longshoreman that if they did what I do, which is that the moment there is no work, you have your nose in printed matter, they could write.
Now, when I was young and used to work in gangs and teams and one thing or another, the idea that I was a kind of a kid writer, newspaper man, a pseudo-intellectual or something, that used to create a certain alienation with fellows.
But I am one of them. They know that I am one of them. I am really average. If you want to know how the average old German is going to vote on anything, you ask me. They're going to vote exactly the way I'm going to vote. Not because I propagandize them, because I'm one of them. I just happen to be interested in ideas. What's wrong with that? I think you could be a Michelangelo and still be a plain working. See? This is what I am. And they know that no matter how many books I write, I'm still one of them. All my reactions, there's no, there's never been a feeling of separation. They know that I don't want to go anywhere, that if I had the choice to only be in China, I would never change. I would never go anywhere.
I can't understand how you can make this two sides of your nature in your life operate. You work with these people, you can sit down, drink a beer with them, you're just like them, they take you as one of them. On the other hand, you're seeing them in a different way.
Well, you assume that these people are not intelligent, or let's say intellectual. Let me tell you, these people are tremendously intelligent. And there isn't an idea in the world that I couldn't discuss with these people. I remember when I wrote The True Believer, one night I wrote the only poetical section in that cold book that you call it cold. I don't call it cold at all. It was the chapter on things which are nothing. Maybe you remember that section that from the beginning of time, men fought most desperately for cities yet to be built and gardens yet to be planted. And in the morning I was full of it and I had to talk to somebody. And I went to work with a Negro in the hall and I talked to him. And he caught on to it. It turned out that he was a preacher. And next Sunday he preached on things which are not. Or take this instance. In January, I received a help letter from, a telegram from Harvey Shapiro at the New York Times. Here comes February the 14th, Brotherhood Day, and they haven't got an article. Would I write an article on Brotherhood of Men? I never thought about Brotherhood of Men, never had that thought of it. Now, I like Harvey Shapiro. See, if I can do anything for him, I'll do it. And so I started to think on it, and I had the first sentence read, it's much easier to love humanity as a whole than to love one's neighbor. Mm-hmm. And so my article was not going to be about the Brotherhood of Men, but the love of neighbor. Now, every longshoreman is a neighbor.
Yeah.
So I had to find out what it takes to love your neighbor. And that whole article was discussed on the company's time, right under the hook, on the stringer. And they wrote it.
You know, you write with a kind of icy objectivity, but you talk with quite a different tone. How do you explain it?
I don't know about the icy objectivity there. See, you try to be fair. And you try to write the best way you know. I don't feel that I'm full of ice or anything like that. I'm full of passion, actually. And if I wasn't a passionate person, if I didn't have a passionate state of mind, how the heck would I write about mass movements? How would I write the book, The Passionate State of Mind? How the heck do I know anybody about it unless he has it in him? And you see, this is a fantastic thing, Mr. Silverman. I had Hitler in me, I had Stalin in me, I had all the murderers in me. Nothing that man has ever done or thought is foreign to me. It's just impossible. You know, I told you about Goethe saying that he has never heard of a crime that he couldn't commit. There are crumbs of everything inside of us. And all you have to do is be acquainted with yourself and you know the whole world.
Mr. Hoffer, you've written a great deal about leisure.
Doesn't it seem to you that free time now is the privilege of
everybody.
More of the working class? The higher you go to business,
absolutely,
the less time you have.
Of course, America is for the poor, Mr. Severide. Only we have a good time in this country. The rich have it much better elsewhere, better service, more deference.
Sure.
Even Russia, the rich are better off than they are here. And certainly the intellectuals are better off everywhere else. You know, it's the only people who really feel at home in this country are the common people. America is God's gift to the poor. See, and that's why. For the first time in history, the common people could do things on their own. Oh, This is, nobody mentions this. We are a business civilization, this civilization, but this is the only mass civilization there ever was. The masses, Mr. Severide, eloped with history to America, and we have been living in common law marriage with it, you know, without the incantations of the intellectuals there.
Say, Ben, want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you going to do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Me too. Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big ace.
Ace bets.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where's the clown?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush. Nothing.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jack, bet up.
Politics and poker, shuffle up the cards and find the joker. Need a game for children, need a game is rough. Decisions, decisions, like
who to pick,
how to play, not to bet,
where's the call of duck?
All right now, fellas, politics or poker, which is more important?
Paratrays.
Bet 'em.
Little trades, good as gold.
I'll say.
Raise your five.
I'll call.
I'll hold.
I'll raise your back.
I think you're bluffing.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Okay, I'm in.
Gentlemen, knock it off and let's get this done.
Try Michael Fanyashinkovich. I'm certain he'd run.
Mike is out. I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
How about Dave Zimmerman?
Davey's too bright.
What about Walt Gustafson?
Walt died last night.
How about Frank Monahan?
What about George Gale?
Frank ain't a citizen and George is in jail.
We could run out Wallenstein.
He's only 23.
What about Ed Peterson?
You